And welcome to the Epic Echo, presented by the Eastern Panhandle Empowerment Center in West Virginia. This is your host, Nora Frazier.
Welcome to another episode of the Epic Echo, and surprise, you have a new host for today. You may recognize me as Trey Goldeisen. I was interviewed by Nora in the previous episode of the Epic Echo, but today I thought maybe I'd turn the tables and interview our very own host, Nora. So Nora is originally from Lewis County, West Virginia, in the central part of the state. She moved to the Panhandle to attend Shepherd University and graduated with a bachelor's in social work and a minor in gender and women's studies in 2021. She has also worked with Planned Parenthood as a generation action leader and a field intern throughout her time as a student at Shepherd University. Nora started at Epic in August of 2020 as a field intern and was officially hired as the full-time community coordinator in December of 2020, after which she began hosting the Epic Echo. Hello, Nora.
Hello.
Welcome to your own show.
I have changed roles here, as Trey just said. So I am just going to sit back and be interviewed myself. This is brand new for me. So hopefully it's not too much of a pain to listen to.
I'm sure it will be fantastic. So Nora, to begin, it's Pride Month I know in our last episode, you really interviewed me on what Pride meant and everything like that. But one of the things that we've talked about that a lot of the time tends to get overlooked is bisexuality. So I know that's something that you wanted to talk about today. So to begin, how would you define bisexuality?
Well, first, I guess I should go ahead and say that although I'm not an expert on bisexuality by any means, I do identify as a bisexual woman. So I will go ahead and throw that out there first. Bisexuality is actually pretty complex, as most of the sexual orientations and gender identities can be. Bisexuality is defined a little bit different depending on where you look or who you ask. But I personally identify with the definition that states that a bisexual person is attracted to people of their own gender and another or other genders that are not like theirs. Bisexuality is also an umbrella term, which basically means it covers a broad range of related things that are slightly different, but all belong to the same category. So it's an umbrella term that covers a wide range of identities, terms, attractions, and behaviors that all fit this greater arching definition of bisexuality. Some people choose to identify with other definitions that are more the traditional sense, I think, of what people think of when they hear bisexuality, which is that they're attracted to men and women. But as I said, I personally choose to identify with that definition that says I'm attracted to those with my gender identity. I'm a cisgender woman. And then those not like my gender identity, which covers a pretty broad range of gender identities.
Absolutely. And just to clarify, when we say cisgender, for those people who might not understand what cisgender means, as it is a relatively new term being used, can you define that for us?
Yeah, I probably won't get this quite exactly right, but cisgender essentially means that I was assigned female at birth and I identify as a female. So my gender identity hasn't changed since I was born. There are also obviously many other gender identities such as transgender where your gender may shift from the gender you were assigned at birth to the gender you identify with. But as a cisgender woman, I was assigned female at birth and I still identify with that gender.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for clarifying that.
Of course.
So you stated that you identified as a bisexual individual and you stated your own kind of the definition that resonated with you most. But I'm sure that you've encountered a lot of perceptions of the bisexual identity throughout your life, both as a bisexual person, but also just in general, in media, talking with people, things like that. Can you talk a little bit about what your experiences with those perceptions, what they are, how they can be helpful or harmful? that kind of thing.
Yeah, of course. So one of the biggest perceptions, and this comes from both within the LGBTQ plus community, but more so I've experienced it from outside of the LGBTQ plus community. Sometimes bisexuality is perceived as kind of a temporary state of transitioning from being heterosexual to homosexual attraction, which is acceptable for some. If that is the journey that your sexuality takes you on, that's absolutely fine. But it's important to remember that sexuality is a spectrum, which means it's not fixed. It's not set in stone for your entire lifetime. So some of those people who have used the term bisexuality to identify themselves and then who, you know, change to a different sexual orientation later on, that's totally acceptable. But what's important to remember is that being bisexual is in itself also a sexual orientation. It's not for everyone used as that transitional stepping stone from one sexual orientation to another. For some of us, that just is our identity. And that is how I identify. A good rule of thumb for anyone in your life who considers themselves bisexual is just to take them at their word. We shouldn't assume that just because we know one person who has used bisexuality as a state of transition, that every bisexual person you meet is also doing the same. It's pretty important just to take them at their word. If they say they're bisexual, then they're bisexual. And if that changes later on, then that's fantastic that you get to go on that journey with them.
Absolutely. And I definitely want to touch on that fact that, you know, there are people out there who do use it as a transitional state. And what you're saying is that there's nothing wrong with that, that it is a valid way to kind of ease into your own identity, especially if you at the time believe that you're bisexual, but that doesn't invalidate those who identify as bisexual for their lives. I mean, because that is a valid identity. And I think that we see that sometimes where, at least in my experience, in my personal life, it's been men who have said, I'm bisexual, and then have later on come out and said, no, actually, I'm gay. And a lot of people say, you know, I've heard people say, well, I knew that. Like I knew that was going to happen eventually. Have you had those experiences with people who have kind of, you know, invalidated it in that way and kind of been like, well, I knew that was going to happen. Like,
I've had some interesting experiences with, you know, peers and also with friends and, you know, just experiences out in the world with those who identify as bisexual or under the bisexual umbrella. And I think a lot of times there is a little bit of pressure, it feels, to either really hold your ground and you kind of feel the need to like buckle down and almost prove that you truly are bisexual, or else there's kind of this fear that someone's going to assume that it's just the transitional stage that we've been talking about. But also in my experience, I've done, you know, a little bit of research into the history of those of us who identify as bisexual. And I know that it is, I mean, I myself identify as, like, I know that for a lot of us, it is just our identity. And so I think that, you know, if someone uses it as a stepping stone, I personally don't take any offense to that. I don't think that it does anything negative to impact the way I view myself. That might not be everyone's experience, and that's absolutely fine. But for me, I just ask that you respect my identity and you take that at its word. And if one day that changes, then follow along with me. I'll make sure to keep you updated if there are any changes. But I don't see that coming. And I know for a lot of my peers and for a lot of the ones that have paved the way for me to be this bisexual woman I am today, we don't truly expect any of those changes to come. We're pretty secure in identifying with the term bisexual or pansexual or any of those other great terms under our umbrella.
Absolutely. And I know that we touched on this briefly in the previous episode when you were interviewing me, but one of the things that we talked about was, is this causing harm for these identities to be, you know, this new terminology for the identities that have existed to come around, I'm kind of getting from you that that's kind of what you're saying, is that it's not causing anyone harm. You know, if somebody believes that they're bisexual and then later finds out, oh wait, maybe I'm not bisexual, maybe I'm straight, or maybe I'm gay, then that's a valid experience to go through. But it's also a totally valid experience to be bisexual or pansexual. Do you feel that that there's misconceptions about bisexuality from these perceptions that might be causing, you know, people to feel less comfortable with identifying as bisexual solely?
I think we're in a really interesting place right now as a queer community. And I say queer community because I myself also identify with the term queer, but not everybody within the LGBTQ plus community is comfortable using that term. So I want to say that too. That's not a term that should be used interchangeably unless you know that that person also identifies with that term. I myself am comfortable having that word used as part of my identity. I do identify as a queer bisexual woman. So that's fine for me, but it's not fine for everyone. I like to make sure that I state that when I use this term. But I think with this kind of new roadmap that our community is paving over the past, you know, decade or couple of decades, not saying these identities are new, but as we talked about in the last episode, we're getting more terminology mm-hmm. to kind of fill our word banks within the community. And I think that there has been a little bit of a realization that some people's perception of bisexuality is sometimes perceived as maybe being transphobic or mm-hmm. as maybe being not as welcoming to those who identify as genderqueer or non-binary, which is why I made sure to try to cover as many of those definitions I could as possible in the beginning. But for me personally, like I said, I identify with the definition of my gender and those that are not like my gender. So that is the way that I perceive it. However, there are some who have started using terms like pansexual to try to more clearly capture all of the rest of those gender identities. And I think that that's fantastic. You know, I think I didn't really know most of the terms that I know now when I was coming out in a small community, in a rural community. I didn't know, truthfully, a lot about myself and what I was experiencing or those like me. But I found the term bisexual first. And I remember that very clear feeling inside of, oh my gosh, that is me. Like, I identify as that. And so I have a very close relationship with the term bisexual. It's the first word that I ever heard that made me feel like I was understood by somebody else. Like, there was a word out there to explain this conflicting feeling I had been having of, am I straight? Am I gay? And then finally this word probably popped up on the internet or something. And I said, wow, that's real. What I'm feeling is real and it's okay. And so bisexual for me is a word that holds a lot of power because of that experience. But for others, that experience may have happened with the word pansexual. They may have had that same giddy feeling that I want everybody to get when they think about their identity. And I think that that's perfectly fine as long as we as a community can continue to listen to each other and not make those quick judgments that are so easy to make sometimes as things change and we all kind of have to adjust to change in our own ways. And I think it's just important to make sure that we're listening to each other and that we aren't rushing to kind of erase any terms, because I think that that almost goes against what our community to me has always stood for. We don't have to erase a term to come up with a new one. We can just build on them and expand on them. Absolutely. And as long as that term that you carry around with you makes you get that good feeling that I had that first time, then I think that's great.
I think that's really powerful as well to so resonate with a term like that. You know, and it helping you to solidify your own identity. I think that's really amazing. And I'm glad that you were able to find that and to have that experience of that self-discovery and self-identification. It's really powerful.
Were you going to say something else?
There's one other thing that I would like to touch on about that before we move on, because it kind of fits into the same thing. One of the things that also gets asked of our community, and I've been asked this about others, is how do you know if someone is really bisexual? Kind of like, how do you know that they're not using it as, you know, like a cover up or a transition or a whatever? I just want to go ahead and also throw my two cents on this out there as well.
Please do.
It's pretty simple. They'll tell you and you'll believe them. I've had people come to me about friends or about, you know, peers or, you know, celebrities even, and say, well, how do you really know that they're bisexual? I promise there's no test we have to take. Although it, you know, if there were, I would hate to see what that would look like. But we're all just, you know, whether it's being used as a temporary placeholder or whether that is that, again, that term that gives you that great feeling inside, they'll tell you and you'll believe them. And that's kind of where the book closes on that one, just as a rule of thumb.
Absolutely. I think that's a really valid point. And I think it's a really helpful point to make, because it doesn't really matter,
right,
that whether or not they are bisexual or to you. To them, obviously, to the individual, it matters, because that's their identity. But to you, whether or not they're genuinely saying I'm bisexual or saying that, and then later on they're going to transition into saying that they're a different identity, you know, it shouldn't matter to you. You should embrace them and you should welcome them no matter what. And
to the best of my knowledge, they're not giving out trophies yet. So until we have that, I think you just have to take them at their word.
You just have to take them at their word and just go with it. So I think that's great. Though we should have trophies. There should absolutely be trophies.
I would love that. Absolutely.
I'll make you a trophy. the last question that I kind of want to talk about on this topic before we move on to the next question is, one of the things that I tend to see, and that I think a lot of people tend to see, is whenever a bisexual individual says that they're bisexual, people tend to think that women are actually straight and just going through like a curious, like rebellious college phase or something. But men, they automatically assume that they're actually gay. Now, obviously, this isn't a universal rule, but it is, in my experience, common. Do you have any comments about that?
I mean, truthfully, this is something that I've tried to wrap my head around for years now. And I think that really it does truthfully boil down to this toxic masculinity that's so prevalent in every thread of, you know, the greater community and the LGBTQ community. I think it's a lot easier to imagine someone who, you know, is supposed to be feminine, you know, doing these things and writing them off. And, you know, that's fine because you're feminine. So, you know, you're not expected to uphold so much of this, you know, weight that oftentimes, you know, men can be brought, it can be brought down upon men a lot harder with masculinity. And I think that it's harder for people to wrap their heads around someone who is either supposed to be what is perceived as a straight, heterosexual, masculine man versus, you know, what a lot of people perceive, which is, as we know, inaccurate about all gay men being, you know, more feminine. I think it's a lot harder for people to see those boundaries crossed in men than it is in women. And on the flip side of that, I think that sometimes women have to work a little bit harder to be taken seriously as bisexuals because, you know, it is kind of perceived as something that's more, you know, lighthearted and yeah, sure, it's fine. But like, eventually you have to grow out of it is kind of what women are, or in my experience also, like you're expected to either, you know, pick a side either way. So I think it comes down to the masculinity. It's harder to picture men kind of crossing those boundaries of sexuality. And then with women on the flip side, they're kind of expected to grow out of their bisexuality and, you know, be, I think a lot of the times, if you can't prove your bisexuality, then you're perceived as straight. A lot of women that I know who consider themselves bisexual struggle a lot with, you know, oh, if I'm in a heterosexual relationship, does that invalidate my sexuality? And it absolutely shouldn't, but I think that comes from the same conversation.
I think you are pretty much right on the money with that.
Yeah. And that's just my own personal opinion, my own experience, but that's kind of what I've myself deduced from these scenarios.
It definitely resonates with my beliefs about the topic as well. It definitely feels correct. So moving on, and you kind of touched on this a little bit when you talked about like people asking about celebrities, but how are bisexual people really represented in media? What has been your kind of experience with that, seeing people who are identified as bisexual represented in media of any form?
When I was younger, mind you, I'm still very young. So a lot of my examples that I'll probably bring up here are more recent. But when I was younger, even in like high school and things, I experienced a lot of kind of what we just touched on, it being used as a transitional point for characters, who may, you know, if it was, you know, a female identifying character, they have only dated men up into a certain point, and then they choose to date a woman. And rather than the writers taking an opportunity to highlight bisexuality, they oftentimes will just on the flip, it's like the flip of a coin, they go from being straight to gay, which is fine. That is a lot of people's experience. And I think that that's great. But I also think it's a little bit of a missed opportunity on their part. To also highlight this very prevalent, very common, very, you know, old, we're not new, also, you know, sexual orientation. But I have, you know, some examples in mind about those missed opportunities, one of which being Willow Rosenberg from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. For anyone who, you know, has seen the show, followed that through, is, you know, written as a straight character, up until the point when she is not, and then, you know, goes directly to identifying as gay. But then they also continue to write in, you know, this relationship that she had with, you know, her previous boyfriend and how that's kind of still, you know, playing on her emotions. And, you know, there's just kind of like a, oh, will they, won't they? Which to me just always felt like a perfect opportunity for them to have written in this bisexual character rather than making it so much more complicated for the viewers to follow that storyline. I know that you are a Buffy fan as well, Trey. So
I am a huge Buffyverse fan. I have had very similar thoughts in the past as you. It's definitely always bothered me a bit. Obviously, Willow is one of my favorite characters in the show, if not my absolute favorite, but I agree with you. I think it was definitely a very huge missed opportunity for it to be a situation where, you know, even after she started to be with, spoiler alert, with another woman, a relationship with a man that she had, he comes back and then it's like he's the jealous ex, like getting angry over the new relationship. And it's exactly the way that it would have been handled if it was a guy that Willow was with. But then throughout the show, Willow is actively constantly making comments like gay now, whenever there's any insinuation of any kind that, you know, towards any men, gay now, as if it is, as you said, a switch that got flipped or a coin that got flipped, and then all of a sudden now it's like totally opposite, like these are not the kids, these cannot exist together type situations, even though even in the show it's shown that it does exist together. So I agree with you. I think it was definitely a missed opportunity.
Yeah, and I don't want to discredit anyone who, you know, we all have to start somewhere. When the society that we live in, everyone is perceived as heterosexual until they say they aren't. Mm-hmm. And for some people, that is their transition. You know, they identify as what everyone else has told them to identify as, which is heterosexual, and then they realize that they are not. And I think that that's great. But as someone who had never seen bisexual representation in TV at all until very recently, I just think it was a missed opportunity that they could have taken there. And then another missed opportunity, this one is a little more lighthearted, I think, and it's even perceived very differently, but in the show Bob's Burgers, which is one of my personal favorites, there's a lot of kind of like innuendo to the main character, Bob Belcher, who's in a great, healthy, loving relationship with his wife, Linda. He kind of meets other men and will, you know, like have moments where he gets very flustered. And he seems like he's, you know, like a little bit shy and like he's almost kind of trying to and failing miserably to flirt with these men who he considers his cooking icons or whoever it may be. And I think that they kind of have the great makings of a bisexual character who's in a happy, loving relationship, which we don't often see. So I think that that show is still going, as Buffy is not. So I'm hoping that's something I've been holding out for a while now. I hope that they stick a name on what it is that we're watching Bob go through throughout the show. That being said, though, there are some really good examples, more recent examples of canonically bisexual characters in the media from some of my favorite shows. Is there a correlation between having a bisexual character and being one of my favorite shows? It's possible. I'll be honest with it. It feels very good, as with most identities, to have some representation. There's Rosa Diaz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Her coming out scene and her captain, Captain Holt, who is a Black gay captain who often talks about what it was like to join the police force. They have a very special moment where, I don't have it exactly, but there's a quote that's something along the lines of, anytime someone shares their true identity, the world becomes a little bit better or something like that, which I just think is great. I think that was a beautiful moment. And I'm glad the writers took that opportunity to actually explicitly say, I am bisexual, and see some great relationship progress and, you know, coming out to her squad and her family. I think that was great. One of my other favorite shows, Broad City, we have Alana Wexler, also Abby Jacobson. They are both considered bisexual characters within the show. We see some healthy relationships and also just, you know, some promiscuity as the show goes on. And I think that that's really great. It was really great for me when I entered college and was just starting to come out to kind of have this icebreaker that all of my friends were watching and be like, yeah, same, you know, when they would be on TV. And then the last one that I'll mention is kind of one of the more rare examples, which is on the now highly popular show Schitt's Creek, David Rose, who identifies as pansexual, which, as we said, is under this greater bisexual umbrella, is kind of, to my knowledge, one of the first examples of a male identifying character identifying under the bi umbrella. And I think that that's really important too, because bisexual men do exist. They're not a myth, as some people might believe. So I think it's really important to have a bisexual male character also on screen, because, you know, bisexual men deserve that same experience that I have with, you know, when I was watching Broad City. They deserve to look on the screen and say, oh, if, you know, David Rose can be in a healthy relationship, then, you know, maybe that's out there for me too. So I think that that's really important.
I agree. I think it is very important. And I know you've been touching on it a few times now, but can you talk just a little bit more about the lack of representation for bisexual men? I mean, you mentioned David Rose, but I'm racking my brain while you're talking and trying to think of any other examples. And maybe I just haven't seen enough shows, but I can't think of any other examples of a bi or pan identifying masculine person.
Yeah, it's pretty rare. Person. It's like a needle in a haystack situation. And I think that it goes back to that conversation that we had earlier, mm-hmm. about the fact that it's so hard for people to grapple with masculinity and sexuality as a whole, But I think that people are more comfortable now when they have clear lines of, you know, this man is straight or this man is gay. And we know what those boxes look like for men. And we know how to portray, although I would argue that they don't know how to portray masculinity in either of those roles. And I think that truthfully, people just don't understand how those two things go hand in hand. And no one's really made that much of an effort to ask the community ourselves what that experience is like, or to, you know, I mean, if you don't want to ask, I mean, there's history out there too. I mean, bisexual men have always been around. So I just think it's a lack of understanding that then leads to a lack of representation, which then fuels the lack of understanding, excuse me. So I think we're just caught in a pretty unfortunate cycle, as with most, you know, media representations. They get caught into these cycles of, well, nobody understands it, so we can't write about it. But if we're not writing about it, then nobody understands it. And then these things continue until someone, you know, like Schitt's Creek comes along and kind of tries to break that mold.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you telling us a little bit more about that, because I think that you're very insightful on this matter, because it's not something that I've, you know, it's not something I've even thought about the lack of representation of bisexual men. And as soon as you said it, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right. There really isn't. So it is definitely something that I think there needs to be more investment in the bisexual community.
There's a lot of misunderstanding too. I know that, you know, even, you know, myself, I've experienced people, you know, saying these things that are perceived as bisexual stereotypes that the media has fueled about, well, you know, if they can't make a decision on their sexuality, they can't hold, you know, a true relationship or a healthy relationship, because a lot of people see it as, you know, we're just figuring things out. So if we can't figure out what's going on inside, how can we be in a healthy relationship? And I think that that's a really, really horrible stereotype that, you know, some of these shows that I've mentioned, they're starting to chip away at that. I mean, spoiler, if you haven't seen Schitt's Creek, mute your phone right now for the next couple of seconds. But getting to see his relationship with Patrick, and, you know, their struggles with, you know, being in a healthy relationship for the first time and all of those things, I think that that's really, really important, because I know myself, for a period of time, I was like, well, I mean, maybe they're right. Maybe I can't, you know, hold a relationship for a long period of time, because I'm just going to constantly want to be flip-flopping from gender to gender. But that's just, I mean, it's just not realistic. And, you know, I thankfully have gotten to the point where I've convinced myself that it is possible. But I think that the more representation we see, the more we can break down those stereotypes, and it would be very beneficial to the community, and would help us kind of understand ourselves a little bit better.
Absolutely. And I think you touched on a really important point. Representation matters, you know, and negative representation is incredibly harmful. I mean, it can cause people to think, you know, oh, you know, bisexual individuals are portrayed as basically like wishy-washy and not able to hold down any healthy relationships. So clearly I'm not going to be able to do that. And that's the type of thing that poor representation or negative representation can cause people to see and to believe. So I think you hit a really valid point there that that people don't think about when they're making these shows or when they're watching these shows necessarily, unless they identify as part of this community.
Yeah, and you know, the more characters I think that happen, the more willing, more shows will, it's the snowball effect, you know. Absolutely. The more that it happens, the more that it'll continue to happen. And I think we're in a great place right now where it seems like we're on the verge of this cutting edge world where representation is starting to be more prevalent. And that's of all identities. I mean, you know, we have shows on NBC that are talking about Indigenous folks and their history, which is phenomenal and way overdue. And, you know, we have great shows for even teenagers that are starting to address things like identity and sexuality. And I think we're really in a good spot right now, and I hope the progress continues.
As do I. So moving on to Pride itself. What is Pride Month specifically for your own personal experience? What has that been like for you as an individual who is part of the LGBTQ plus community, but also as a bisexual individual?
I love Pride, as I think most members of the community do. It's really a fun time of every year that I've been looking forward to since coming out. I love going to festivals and parades and events and wearing my flag colors, you know, in these big community settings that feel so great. But I think just this year, I've started to really put into my own perspective, like, what Pride actually does mean to me. And the two biggest words that come to mind are celebration. You know, our community endures a lot every year, every day. Members of our communities, for certain, much more than others, but still, you know, we endure a lot as a community in its whole. And I think that we all acknowledge the work that still needs to be done, both within the community and outside of the community, to make it safer and better for all of us. But I think it's important to also remember that we do have a lot to celebrate. And that to me is something that I, you know, we can do the work 11 months out of the year, and that's fantastic. And that's absolutely what we should be doing. But I also see Pride Month as a time when the members of the community should celebrate. You should celebrate your personal accomplishments, because being a part of the LGBTQ plus community is an accomplishment. You know, recognizing your identity and being, you know, on the path or already, you know, in a space where you are comfortable with your identity, I think that's a lot to celebrate. We have a lot of really great LGBTQ plus ancestors that have done a lot of work that we need to celebrate and remember. And that leads to the other word that comes to mind, which is reflection. We do a lot of learning about our history all year and learning about, you know, the new challenges that our community faces, because there are always new challenges coming up. So I think it's good to reflect on your personal journey and our community's journey.
Absolutely. So what has been your favorite experience at Pride?
Let me think. Oh, goodness. I've only been to Pride festivals 1 year so far. I came out, well, it never ends. I began coming out in 2017, and I still come out pretty much every day, as we all do. But I began coming out in 2017, and then kind of just was figuring out my place in this whole community and my own identity. And so I didn't actually go to any Pride festivals until 2019. That year I went to 3. They were each phenomenal. And then of course in 2020, because of COVID, we all protected ourselves and our communities and we stayed home, rightfully so. But my favorite Pride probably that I've been to, and I'm not sure if this was the experience itself or the group of people that I went with, but I went to Frederick, Maryland Pride in 2019. And I went with a really close group of friends who I had basically been there since the beginning of my coming out. And I remember, I talked about it also in the last episode, but I remember that feeling of, you know, walking past like the archways where you walk in to where Pride is held in Frederick, and kind of just seeing the city go from a normal city on a Saturday to Pride. I mean, there were stages. They that year had like several stages where drag queens were performing constantly all day. So there were stages set up. As soon as you walk in, you could see queens performing, which was fantastic. And there were flags everywhere. It was one of the first times I remembered seeing people wearing flags as capes, as they do at Pride, which I think is so fun. And I saw several people walk by with bisexual flags as capes. Yay. And at that time, I didn't even have any bisexual flag merch or memorabilia. I got some that day, but I remember seeing that stuff and just feeling so welcome instantly. And I hope that everybody gets to have that Pride experience that I did, because it was truly something that was magical.
Well, I'm incredibly happy that you had such a positive experience at Pride, and I share your sentiment. I hope that everyone's Pride events, whatever they go to, I hope that they're just as positive and powerful. So for the next question, I really wanted to ask, I would love to hear more about bisexual history, because I know you've been kind of doing a bunch of research on that topic, as you've mentioned a couple of times, I believe, in this, if not on recording, then off recording beforehand. I would love to hear more about the actual history of the bisexual movement, if you wouldn't mind telling us some of those things that you might have learned.
Yeah, I mean, I am still learning a lot. Just this year, I have finally, I think, gotten a good enough grasp on the community's history as a whole to where now I feel like I can truly start my deep dive into my own identity and its history. And some of the things that have helped are what I consider my bisexual icons that are currently still out there, you know, doing this work, who I first could see myself identifying with. Lady Gaga, of course, being one of the most prevalent, who has always held her ground, and, you know, has been someone that I've looked up to. I mean, you know, what was it, 2009 when Bad Romance came out? I'm not sure, exactly, but groundbreaking, life-changing for me as a queer woman who didn't know she was queer yet, that's for sure. And then more recently, Lily Singh, who's hosting Late Nights with Lily Singh, I believe, is the full name of the show, who is a very proud bisexual Indian woman, who I absolutely admire. I love turning on late night television and having this experience that truly no bisexual generation before this one has gotten to have, where we have a late night talk show host who's up there talking about what it's like to be a bisexual woman and a bisexual woman of color. And I don't think that that's something that she takes for granted. And I hope that she feels that our community is not taking it for granted. It's been amazing to see this traditional role that's normally filled by a white man, you know, upwards of 40 years of age, cisgender, heterosexual, that's kind of what we've always seen hosting late night talk shows anyway. And I think that she has just kind of taken everything by storm. She's incredibly funny. You don't have to be queer to laugh at her jokes, but also she's not hiding it. She's using her platform to her full ability, and, you know, has opening monologues about Pride Month, and what it's like to be a bisexual in Pride Month, and things like that have been really amazing. But then, you know, we have to also acknowledge those that came well before this and well before my time, one of which being something that I've actually only very, very recently learned, it was kind of heartbreaking, I think, to learn that there was such a huge piece of my history that has been overlooked. And that is Brenda Howard. Brenda Howard, who is now entering my vision board as one of my icons officially, who is known as the Mother of Pride. She was a Jewish bisexual woman living in the city of New York during the time of the Stonewall riots. In a month after the Stonewall riots, there was a march that kind of marked what Stonewall had done. It kind of was trying to act as like a solidifying agent of, yes, we rioted. A month later, hi, we're still here and we're not gonna go anywhere just because those three nights are over. Like, I think that march was really kind of like, we let them take a breath and then we said, surprise, now we're organizing even bigger and even better, and we're gonna march through the streets as this whole unit. And Brenda Howard was there. She marched in that commemorating event. And a year later, she was one of the few that organized the first Christopher Street Liberation Day March, which was meant to mark Stonewall's anniversary. It's considered the first Pride parade. Although I believe at the time they were still considering it a march because times were very different and it was much more focused on action than celebration. But now we look back and reflect on that as being the first Pride parade in the world. They, you know, I mean, if we look at today and the progress that's been made since that would have been 1970, mm-hmm. there are Pride parades all over the world. And that was all, you know, started with the help of this bisexual Jewish woman, Brenda Howard. And I never knew that. I learned about Stonewall. I knew about the first march. I had seen the photos from 1970 in the march. But I didn't know anything about Brenda Howard. I didn't know her story. And now that I do, I really treasure it. I think it's great for each member of our community to kind of realize that, you know, there are those who have come before us and who, you know, helped people understand why we're here and why we're a part of this community. And Brenda absolutely did that. She fought diligently in New York to make sure that every LGBT, which at the time would have just been GL, gay and lesbian groups and alliances. She made sure that they knew that bisexuals were here, that we were also not going anywhere, and that we were going to take a seat at that table. And largely we have Brenda Howard to thank for that seat. And I believe PFLAG has an award that they call the Brenda Howard Award for those in our community today who are still doing the work to make sure that bisexuals have a place in this community and that, you know, our perspective and our identities are truly being respected. And one of the other really great parts about Brenda is that she was married to a man. She was married to a heterosexual man. And one of my favorite new little tidbits that I learned is that she would go to Pride and she would hold up signs that said, "I'm still bisexual," while she held her husband's hand, which is, you know, we've talked about this already today. That's something that people just tend to not understand. And then she passed, I believe, in 2006. Excuse me if I'm wrong on that date. She died of colon cancer, and her husband still continued to hold up her still bisexual sign because he knew how important her work truly was. And I'm sorry that it took me so long to learn that about my history, but now that I have it, I plan on spreading that knowledge with as many people that identify with bisexuality as I can, because it's really empowering to me, and I can't imagine how empowering it felt to those that actually knew Brenda.
I do not identify as bisexual, and I am completely obsessed with Brenda Howard.
She's so phenomenal.
She is definitely a trailblazer in our community, and she absolutely needs to be known about more. So I am very happy that you learned about her and then brought her here to me, but then to everyone else that might be listening, because it is something that, you know, this is something that needs to be talked about more. Our history, our herstory, and our therestory.
Absolutely.
So winding down to the end, because I know we're running a little bit out of time, I'm going to ask you the question you ask everybody. You already know the question. I don't even need to ask it.
Oh, I have it. I know you have it.
I want to hear it. I want to hear you ask it, because I know you know it.
All right. So that we all know, if you've listened to an episode before, I always make my guests answer the question of what can we do to make our community as, you know, our community as in where we live, and also our community as in the LGBTQ+ community, a little bit better, and truly to make it work for those of us who identify as bisexual, as that's what my whole episode has been about. So I am, I guess, about as prepared to answer it as my guests. And I think that this is very fair, that I should have to do the same. And truthfully, I think it goes back to what I was saying when I was defining bisexuality. And that is that whether or not this is someone's sexuality from the time they choose to begin identifying with it until the end of their time, or whether or not they are going to use it, you know, as kind of like a transition into the LGBTQ+ community, I think that it's either way is great. Your journey is great. Your journey is beautiful. And I respect you and I would love to hear about your journey. But I think that you just have to take them at their word. And that means whether, you know, that would be me as a bisexual when someone comes to me and tells me, or someone as a non-member of the LGBTQ plus community, if someone comes to you and they share that knowledge with you, then take them at their word. As far as you know, and as far as they know, that is their identity. That misconception of all of us are just kind of waiting around for that right moment to step into our solid identity is completely mythical. So I would say take them at their word. If you are a creator of, you know, media, if you're creating podcasts like this or TV or movies or music, making sure you're representing a diverse group of individuals. If you are a business owner or an organization or whatever your work is, making sure that you're, you know, keeping room at the table for LGBTQ plus individuals, BIPOC individuals, all of these marginalized identities. So I think those would be my main two. Respect the bisexuality as an identity, and then, you know, continue to do great work in representation and, you know, make sure that you're leaving plenty of seats open at the table. And if the table's not big enough, then add another.
Absolutely. Add another and another and another and another until everyone is there.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Nora. I thank you for being willing to sit down and be interviewed. And I thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to be the one interviewing you. I really appreciate the trust that you put in me to do that. And thank all of you for joining us and for listening. And until next time.
And happy Pride Month.
And happy Pride Month.
Thanks, Ray.
Thanks, Nora.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Epic Echo. To suggest topic ideas or future guests, you can go to our website at epicwv.org.